The following interview was first aired on TBC Radio in Kingston, Jamaica. For more information on this and other interviews, please visit the Facebook page Connect Pray Act or send an email to connect.pray.act@gmail.com.
Just over a month ago, on our special Emancipation Independence program on July 29th, we featured an interview with this gentleman on the role of Christians in bringing about emancipation and their role in nation building. And we would not have known at that time that that would have been his last interview with us. Yes, listeners, Reverend Earl Thames passed away on August 11th of natural causes. A great loss for Jamaica, but a gain for him to now be with the Lord. And just want to spend a few minutes remembering Reverend Thames, a very distinguished gentleman. And if you're interested, his funeral service is planned for next week, Tuesday, September the 6th, at Webster's Memorial Church on Halfway Tree, starting at 1 o'clock. Now, did you know Reverend Thames was a Rhodes Scholar? Yes, 1958. Went to Oxford and studied politics, philosophy, and economics. And then did a degree in theology and a law degree, an intellectual indeed. And he was at the time of his passing the chaplain of the Knox Complex of Schools in Spalding. He's also a very good tennis player, I understand. He represented Jamaica in 1958 against Princeton University. And an accomplished pianist. That's him playing in the background, the piece of music that we began this section with. And he spent 52 years as an ordained minister. I just want to share with you two brief tributes. The first is from a co-founder of the Issachar Foundation. And Reverend Thames was a favorite and frequent presenter at the Issachar Foundation public lecture. And in fact, he was the very first presenter back in 2010. So we're going to hear from Mrs. Shirley Richards, co-founder of Issachar Foundation.
Reverend Earl Thames. A humble man, a learned man, a passionate soul, somebody who was passionate about the gospel of Jesus Christ, somebody who applied his mind to understanding the word and to be able to communicate the word, somebody who cared deeply for others. I don't know how many of us realize that Rev had a horn on top of his vehicle. And when you ask him why, it was because, well, he would tell you, every Saturday he would go into the market at the Mandeville public market and preach the gospel. You know, a man of great learning, but a humble man. That's how I remember him.
That was Mrs. Shirley Richards, co-founder of Issachar Foundation. And I was able to catch up with Reverend Norbert Stevens, General Secretary of the United Church of Jamaica and the Cayman Islands, to hear his thoughts and reflections on Reverend Thames.
Reverend Thames, I would describe as a giant of the faith, and a giant of man. There was no way in which you could speak about Reverend Thames without speaking about his faith, because he emphasized that over and over, his connection with God, but also his integrity. He was one of those rare people that you don't ever put a butt in anything you have to say about them, about their character, about their nature, about their actions. His year was his year, and his name was his name. So in many ways, he is irreplaceable. He's one of these persons that you never ever meet someone like him again. Quirky sometimes, controversial a lot of times, but genuine. He would challenge you on the thing, and you and him would go at it for a little while. And at the end of it, you shake your hand and laugh, and life will continue. If you were to really almost disaggregate his life and ministry, there are four primary areas. Firstly, he would always tell you that he was an evangelist. Mm-hmm. And some people may not know, but in the 1970s, he left the church actually to take on a prophetic role, mm-hmm. and had done Protestant, if you like, on the corners preaching the gospel, because he felt that the traditional church was not prepared to meet people where they were and to share as Jesus did. The gospels of some persons thought that maybe he was a little crazy. But he was very conscious that this was his sense of call at that time in his life. So evangelism was something that he did.
Yeah.
Secondly, as many people would know, he had a passion for young people.
Yes.
And worked with, and actually was instrumental in forming the Young People's Association in the United Church from the Dr. Mason Evans, as well as the Young Adult Action Movement, which are two associations that are geared at connecting with young people between the ages of 14 to 40. And for many years he served in our camp ministry, sat in the various committees that had work to do with these young people. And his idea was that if you influence young people at an early age, you not only just set them up right in faith, but you also have a continuous stream of persons who are possible candidates for ministry.
Right.
And that was a passion he had. He also had a passion for outreach, and he was always seeking to help people in creative ways. And the fourth passion I think he had was, of course, for social justice.
Yes.
Reverend Evans was instrumental in challenging the whole question of any kind of gambling in Jamaica, horse racing on Sunday, the lot of, and anything to do with equity and equality he was a part of. In our own United Church, he was an advocate, for instance, that ministers, regardless of their tenure,
mm-hmm.
should be paid a basic stipend, and then you probably get an increment based on his years.
Okay.
So that's why I call him a giant of a man,
yeah.
because he's a multifaceted individual, minister of the ecumenical movement, which he was also passionate about, trying to bring churches together to bring a gospel to the world and a gospel to Jamaica that made a difference.
That's Reverend Norbert Stevens, the General Secretary of the United Church of Jamaica in the Cayman Islands. Now, as I said, Reverend Thames was a frequent presenter at Issachar Foundation Public Lectures, and he delivered the first lecture on August 5th, 2010, on the topic of the role of Christians in the emancipation process. And other topics on which he presented were the role of church in nation building, the historicity of Jesus, was he real and is he relevant, the implications of adopting the proposed flexi-work week, and emancipation, economic or spiritual forces. He was also a presenter at JCHS's International Human Rights Conferences, where he spoke about the role and importance of marriage for society. And his last presentation, as I said, on this program was on emancipation, economic or spiritual forces. And that presentation is up on podcast on the webpage connectprayact.podomatic.com. So feel free to go and listen. But right now we're going to play an excerpt of Reverend Ten's lecture in February last year, February 2015. The topic was the historicity of Jesus. Was he real and is he relevant? And we're going to pick up where Reverend Ten's addresses the second question, whether Jesus was and is still relevant. So let's listen now.
No. Having sought to show without any doubt the reality of Jesus, the second question, however, is a little more difficult. Is he relevant to the world in which we're living today? Because remember, even if we prove that he lived, this is over 2,000 years ago. And therefore, it could be argued quite feasibly that he was relevant then, but not relevant. No. Let us therefore examine the question of relevance. Let me begin by stating, this question is not easy to answer, because what is relevant to some persons may not be relevant to others. In fact, relevance depends a lot on personal opinion. Nevertheless, we can actually take a close look at the world and say, to some extent, that such and such a thing is relevant to the needs of the world. It is there that we must begin, with the needs of the present world. The first need which I'd like to bring to your notice is the need for a moral compass. A moral compass. There is so much confusion in our world as to what is right and wrong, that the popular ethical philosophy is that there is no such thing as right and wrong. Everything, it is said, depends on one's own feeling. Now, this is a re-emergence of that time in the history of Israel. I'm sure some of you will have read it, where it was said that there was no prophet in the land, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. The prophet was the moral compass of Israel. Without the prophet, there was no way easily to determine moral issues, right and wrong. However, it does not take any great wisdom to see that if such a situation is allowed to exist for any length of time, it would lead to chaos. If I might use a simple illustration, you cannot allow every person to drive on the side of the road that he or she likes. If you did, you're bound to have crashes and fatalities. You just can't allow it. Therefore, the world cannot exist with each man determining for himself or herself, woman, what's right and what's wrong. Now, the question that arises when we say that, what moral compass are we to use in the world? As we examine the various moral theories which have been presented to the world, there is no doubt that the highest and most comprehensive ethical teaching has been that of Jesus Christ. The Sermon on the Mount, for instance, has been recognized as enunciating the highest moral principles known to the world. Western civilization was built on the teachings of the Christian faith. Most of the social reforms which the world has seen, for example, the emancipation of slaves, the rise of women, the reforms of prisons, the establishment of education and of hospitals, the care of the less fortunate, have all been the result, if you examine it, of the Christian faith. Recently, President Obama has come under intense criticism for his statement that not only ISIS, but the church has committed atrocities in the name of religion. He's right. The burning of heretics, the drowning of the Anabaptists by Calvin, the discrimination of blacks by white Christians in South Africa and America were all atrocities committed in the name of Christ. But what he omitted to say was that these atrocities have now been recognized as atrocities and have been at least partially overcome through the influence of the Christian faith. This is what has done it. In other words, it didn't just happen, you know, friends. So, let us run through some of these things. In the case of slavery, it was the church that fought against the world and the church. In the case of apartheid, it was the church that fought against the world and the church. It was no accident that Nelson Mandela was accompanied out of prison by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Here in Jamaica, it is no accident that despite the theory of Eric Williams that emancipation came through economic causes, many of the villages in the island have names such as Wilberforce, Clarksonville, Buxton, which are the names of the reformers who led the emancipation struggle in England. It is no accident that the motto of the League of Nations, the precursor of our present United Nations, was from the Bible. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. This is because the main architect of the League of Nations was President Woodrow Wilson, an ardent Christian who declared that in advocating for the League of Nations, he wanted to put the Sermon on the Mount into international affairs. He said so. Now, the Christian faith has therefore led the world in moral aspiration. Christ and his teaching has been the best moral compass which the world has known. Despite the retreat in the Western world from the Christian faith today, there is no greater moral compass known to mankind. It is needed today. But our world needs more than a moral compass. It needs moral power. It is one thing to know the right and the wrong, but it's a vastly different thing to perform the right and to avoid the wrong. Now, let us look at our world. It is in the realm of doing, not knowing, that humankind is weak. It is here that Christ is most relevant. He did not only teach the highest morality to his disciples. He declared to them, "You shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost has come upon you." And that which distinguished the followers of Christ from their contemporaries was their ability to perform, to do. Hence the book, The Acts of the Apostles. Not the teaching, the Acts. Whether it was missionaries going to the uttermost, most remote parts of the world, whether it was reformers fighting against powerful human forces to transform unjust social conditions, or humble Christians facing the lions and wild animals in Rome, the followers of Christ have demonstrated a power not their own. Christ has motivated and empowered persons to act beyond their own abilities. Today, the world needs not only a moral compass, but moral empowerment. Only Christ can enable this. The third need of the world is for personal satisfaction, fulfillment, and meaning to life. The life of humankind at present is characterized, I would dare to say, by disappointment and dissatisfaction. Despite the advances and achievements of science and technology, the majority of human beings are not happy. They are disappointed with life. Hence the high number of suicides in the so-called advanced countries, such as the Scandinavian countries. In spite of seeming wealth and better social and material conditions, the lives of families, communities, countries, as well as individuals, reflect a lack of joy, a lack of fulfillment. It is this which has led to our present sex culture. The only thing which seems to offer a feeling of happiness, of meaning, of fulfillment, is sex. This has become the aim and goal of life to such an extent that we are witnessing its abuse and perversion. It is not enough to have a wife or a husband with whom to engage in this activity. Many are now turning to other persons regardless of their gender, just to obtain this pleasure, this temporary fulfillment. The attraction of this perverted form of the sex act with one of the same gender is that it comes without the risk of a child being produced. The sad fact about this activity is that if it became the norm for all human beings, it would mean the end of the human race. In other words, it contains in itself the seeds of human destruction. These unions do not, therefore, provide the answer to the need of the world. for joy, satisfaction, fulfillment. On the other hand, it is the promise of Christ that a genuine relationship with Him produces joy, satisfaction, and fulfillment. His promise of the Holy Spirit given to His disciples is the answer to the world's needs, because the very things which humankind lacks are the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, goodness, faith, patience, meekness, and self-control. It should also be mentioned that the present lack of care for others, the absence of real community spirit, and the wave of selfishness engulfing humankind can only be redressed by the sacrificial love which the Holy Spirit gives to those who are open to His influence. But the only person who can give the Spirit to individuals is Christ. The need of the world for Him is therefore obvious. The sad fact, however, is that persons continue to search for these essentials of life in the wrong places. They keep on trying broken cisterns, can hold no water. Like the woman at the well, they thirst again, but they will not turn to the only one who has the water of life, living water. Humankind needs Christ. The final and ultimately greatest need of humankind is for a better world than the present one. Despite all the criticisms, mockery, and caricatures of heaven, the pie in the sky when we die, mankind longs for a better world. It is significant that no matter how much money a person has, he wants something more. No matter how many wives he has, he wants something more. No matter how big a job he has, he wants something more. There's a quest for that which is something more than our present experience of life. One may take a world tour, visit Disneyland many times, yet at the end of the experience, there is an anticlimax. There's a longing for something more. It is this longing which has led men, women, and now young people, as our newspapers tell us, to offer themselves to become human suicide bombers. Because, as reported, they are promised that after death, they will be rewarded with a place of abundant joys and pleasures where all their dreams will be fulfilled. However, one does not have to be a member of Al-Qaeda or other terrorist organization to admit that deep within one's breast is a longing for a greater life, a fuller life, something more than the present world offers. It is Jesus Christ who answers this need better than anyone else. He not only passed through this life, passed through death, and entered that other life, but came back to tell us what that life is like. He responded to this deepest human need when He said, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God? Believe also in Me. In My Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there ye may be also." He knows the needs of us human beings. He made us. He therefore remains as the only true and sufficient answer to our deepest needs. The question which He continues to ask of the world, therefore, is, do you believe? Do you believe? The answers for the needs of the world are there. The relevance of Jesus Christ is there. But this relevance is only accessible by faith in Him. Will the world believe? Thank you.
Reverend Henry Earl Thames, October 27, 1936 to August 11, 2016. May his soul rest in peace, and I'm sure the Lord said, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Just to remind you that the funeral service for Reverend Thames is set for next week, Tuesday, September 6th, at the Webster's Memorial Church on Halfway Tree Road at 1 p.m. We'll close out this section with another rendition, another performance by Reverend Thames. Here he is on the piano.
Thank you for listening. Send your comments and questions to connect.pray.act@gmail.com. Visit the Facebook page Connect Pray Act for more information.